A few months ago, when our government changed the location of the embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and that has not actually taken place physically yet, that was just a decision that was made. A lot of media people were sent to that area, and many of them hadn't been in that area before. And I was reading an article, and the writer of the article mentioned the fact that he got up one morning, he was on like the 20th floor of the hotel, got dressed and was going to go down to the lobby, got in the elevator and pushed the button for the bottom floor. Every single floor, the elevator would stop, the doors would open, they would wait, and then the doors would close, he'd go to the next floor. Said it took forever to get down to the lobby, and he immediately went to the front desk and said, "The elevator is broken. You know, it's just not working at all." And she said, "I'm sorry, sir, but this is the Sabbath day, and it would be a work if you were to press the call button or press the button that would close the doors or do anything. Now, you can ride on the elevator, but you can't do any work involved with the elevator." It really sounds like a lot of technicalities, doesn't it, when you think about all those things. We had good friends in Houston who came out of Judaism and continued to practice many of the things for quite some time afterwards. Their big deal on Friday afternoon was what channel to leave the TV on. You couldn't turn the TV on, and you couldn't change the channel, but if it were on, you could watch it. So the kids, of course, wanted to see cartoons on Saturday morning. Dad wanted to see the ball game on Saturday afternoon. Any number of issues. And so it all came down to this one particular channel that would have to be chosen. Sabbath is so precise that you can open your refrigerator, but you can't start a fire. And you think, what do those have in common? Well, there's a light in your refrigerator, and start opening the door would start the light that would cause a fire to begin. So you either had to remove the light bulb entirely from your refrigerator, or as this couple did on Friday afternoon, you would unscrew the bulb just a little bit so that it wouldn't come on Saturday. Can you imagine what it was like to live with all those technicalities? And we sit back and say, well, I am so glad that we don't have to fool with that anymore. And yet, there were beautiful things about Sabbath. One was you took 24 hours of rest. Can you imagine what that would be like? Once a week, you would rest for 24 hours. Well, what would you do during that time? Well, you'd have fellowship. You'd have food. The food had to be made in advance, but families would eat food together. They would enjoy being together. They would have periods of worship. And when you think about the positives that come out of Sabbath, then you can start to say, well, you know, maybe some of those minor technicalities might actually be worth it. Why was there a Sabbath? Well, of course, we know that on the seventh day of creation, God rested. And as a part of the Ten Commandments, there's a Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. So it's a very special time. And the Jews of Jesus' time viewed it with a particular amount of respect and awe. And that, on occasion, creates conflict between Jesus and the Pharisees especially. This morning, as we move through the book of Luke, we're going to be in Luke chapter 6, and I'd encourage you, if you have a Bible, to open it there. The scriptures will be on the screen. We'll start in verse 1. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples began to pick some heads of grain, rub them in their hands, and eat the kernels. Some of the Pharisees asked, "Why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" They're just walking through the grain field, rubbing them, hauling that a bit so that they could eat some of the grain. And probably as you read this verse, you think, well, that's not work. But you have to go back to the context of all the technicalities that were there and continue even until this time. Jesus answered them, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and taking the showbread, he ate what is lawful only for priests to eat. He also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. And we'll talk about that more as we go along. David, if I remember correctly, at the period when he is fleeing from Jerusalem, when Absalom has taken over the throne, he's going to stop and eat some of the bread. It was unlawful to do that. But Jesus is saying that it was an issue of practicality. It was an issue of survival. And so they did that. Another instance of Sabbath comes right after that. These two instances are separated time-wise, but they're revealed both to us by Luke at the same place. On another Sabbath, he went into the synagogue and was teaching. And a man was there whose right hand was shriveled. The Pharisees and the teacher of the law were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him carefully to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. But Jesus knew what they were thinking and said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Get up and stand in front of everyone." So he got up and stood there. Then Jesus said to them, "I ask you, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy it?" He looked around at them all, then said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He did so, and his hand was completely restored. Look at the reaction of the Pharisees, though. But the Pharisees and teachers of the law were furious and began to discuss with one another what they might do to Jesus. They are so angered by this. We've got to get rid of this guy. One of the hypotheticals that I read, that was put before the rabbis, was that let's say you were going for a brief walk on Sabbath day, and you came to a man who had, because of a diabetic illness, needed a candy bar. Would it be all right to drive your car and pay money and bring back the candy bar for this individual? And the rabbis line up on opposite sides of that situation. And so it's into this context where Jesus he's frustrated by a lot of things when he's here on earth. He's frustrated by the money changers of the temple. He's frustrated by a variety of attitudes. But it certainly appears that one of the things that really frustrates him is the fact that the Jewish people, primarily the Pharisees, have just turned this whole process of Sabbath into this mechanism of all these technical things. And they've lost the purpose of it. Jesus is going to tell them a couple of things. First of all, he's going to say, Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. What does he mean there? He means that he's sovereign. He means that as God is sovereign, he is sovereign because he's God's son. And basically what he's saying is, I'm not affected by the Sabbath day. It's the same kind of thought process as is revealed on the cross when he says to the thief there that today you'll be with me in paradise. And you can question the fact that that doesn't sound like the entrance to the kingdom that we'd be familiar with. At the same time, this is God, and he can do whatever he wants to do. Three different places in Luke, Matthew, and Mark, Jesus is going to say that he is the Lord of the Sabbath. It's his choice. He can do what he wants. In Luke chapter 14, verses 3 through 6, Jesus asked the Pharisees and the experts of the law, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" You see, this comes up over and over again. But they remained silent. So taking hold of the man, he healed him and sent them on his way. Then he asked them, "If one of you has a child or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull it out?" And they had nothing to say. There were exceptions. How much trouble would it be to get an ox out of a well? Are you going to just do that in 30 minutes by yourself? No. That's going to take a lot of time. Getting a child out of a well would certainly involve mobilizing as many people as you could possibly find in order to do that as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And maybe if you're reading an NIV, you notice the footnote offers an alternative of donkey there. It can either be a donkey or a child, and some of us who are parents might understand how that could be confusing at times. Jesus is not talking about a simple procedure. It probably literally would have involved the whole community. And they don't know what to say because they know that that's what they would do. They wouldn't just allow that to happen or to take place, take the natural course of action. They'd intervene. And Jesus has just intervened to heal this man. The second thing that's so critical here, if you go to Mark chapter 2, verse 27, then he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." And that's the critical distinction. Why did God rest on day 7 of creation? Was it because he was tired? Is it because he was exhausted? Is it because he's used up all of his energy? No, he's doing that as a role model for us. The same way Jesus is a role model for us when he's baptized by John. He doesn't need to be baptized. He's doing that to demonstrate that that's what we're supposed to do. God rests on the seventh day. That's a benefit for man. And isn't it strange how we can take instruction from God and we can make it a burden when really it's freeing and beneficial? God asks us to forgive each other. And we say, "Lord, that's hard. I don't know if I can do that or not." Who benefits from doing that? Well, we do. And if you've ever nurtured a grudge or harbored ill feelings or been unwilling to forgive, especially over a long period of time, you get to that place where it just literally becomes caustic inside of you. And most of us come to that moment where we say, "It would be better to get rid of this. I should have done what God asked me to do in the first place." There are times when he asks us to serve. There are times when he asks us to utilize and practice stewardship. And all those things can be made into being a burden. But instead, we look at it as a blessing. The Pharisees don't care about the people at all. They're not interested in the people, the men who have these issues in their life, these illnesses, these handicaps. All they want to do is to be legalistic and follow the technicalities of the law. Now, don't misunderstand. Sabbath was a big deal. If you go back to the early days of the establishment of Sabbath, go to Numbers chapter 15. It says, beginning in verse 32, "While the Israelites were in the wilderness, a man was found gathering wood on the Sabbath day. Those who found him gathering wood brought him to Moses and Aaron and the whole assembly. And they kept him in custody because it was not clear what should be done to him." Now, a lot of ultra-conservative, or not a lot, but some ultra-conservative commentators look at this verse and say, well, the reason they held him into custody is they didn't know how to kill him. They didn't have information or a direct directive as to how to do that. I think there's more to it than that. I think Moses and Aaron are like, "We're really supposed to kill him for picking up some firewood?" "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'The man must die. The whole assembly must stone him outside the camp.' So the assembly took him outside the camp and stoned him to death as the Lord commanded Moses." I think it's on a parallel with Nadab and Abihu. When Nadab and Abihu enter strange fire, God says, "This has to stop now." And responds, very, very strongly and very quickly. In this situation, it's kind of the first time that this has come up, and I think God is sending the message that Sabbath is important, and this day of rest is critical. And I'm going to use my instruction to the greatest degree in order that that take place, and in order that that happen. Well, the question kind of comes into our minds: is Sabbath still in effect today? You'll find a number of religious groups who believe that. And people try to say, well, we still have the Sabbath day. Some people say, well, now Sabbath is Sunday. And we'll talk about that more as we go along just a little bit. The question what we simply have to ask about is Sabbath still in effect is the Old Testament still in effect? Well, obviously it's not. We don't have a daily sacrifice. We don't do the various things that they did. We've been released from that. And so if there was any concern about whether we're still to practice the Sabbath or not, it's pretty clear in Scripture. There's also what I think is a definitive Scripture in Colossians chapter 2, verses 16 and 17. Therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink, or with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day. These are a shadow of the things that were to come. The reality, however, is found in Christ. These were things that made statements before. Now that Christ has come, we have that reality, and we're not commanded to experience the Sabbath day. So we just throw it out. And there's this big quandary, though, about what about the wisdom of the Old Testament? We look at Proverbs and you find an incredible amount of wisdom there. What would it do to your life if you took a 24-hour break once a week? What would it do to your family life to have that kind of a circumstance and situation? How would things change? And probably most of you are sitting there thinking, that would be impossible. Now, I'd be lucky if I could find an hour to put to some kind of effort like that. But think about life literally stopping for that 24-hour period. You just spend time with your family. You just spend time in worship. You just spend time in reflection. You just spend time actually resting. Wouldn't that be nice? Resting is a lost art. Anybody here put on a resume, I'm a good rester? It's not the kind of thing you want to put on a resume. I'm good at resting, although it's a good quality to have, because if you're well rested, you're going to be able to do your job. We live in a world where we brag about how busy we are, how things with you. Oh, it's just terrible, you know. I have so much to do. I'm running like crazy. And somehow that's the way we feel that we're supposed to react. If you talk to somebody and they said, how are you? And they said, I'm good, pretty good. I just took the last 24 hours off. I didn't do anything but pray and meditate and worship and be with my family. You know, you might think lazy at that particular moment. We're supposed to be busy. We're supposed to be doing all kinds of things. The idea of a Sabbath rest still comes from the wisdom of God. And like God tells us to do things that remind your children of what God has done in your life. There are rituals that we can use on a regular basis that help us to remember the things that are important in our lives. I know probably people get tired of me talking about my childhood, but when I was a boy growing up, and some of you will remember this because some of you will come and tell me about it afterwards, Sundays were a day of rest. My grandparents lived on a farm, and I spent summers there, but Sunday was for nothing except going to church and being with family. It was a great day. It was a lot of fun. There are times when there were things that needed to be done. But my grandfather was saying, no, this is a day of rest. You'll notice if you look historically that when that broke down is when the Sunday closing laws went out of effect. When they stopped making the stores stay closed on Sunday, then people's patterns changed just a little bit. I think there's still benefit there. And you could quickly say, well, there's no way that I could do that for a whole day. Well, maybe not. But how about a couple of hours? What about an evening? What about a planned time that your family is going to be together to worship together? When I was in youth ministry, we took a trip, a family retreat, parents and kids. And one of the things we did on that weekend was break out and have prayer time together. And a lot of prayer time is families. And I had a young man come to me after that retreat, and he said, you know, that was just really special time for me. And then he said, that was the first time I had ever heard my father pray. He believed that his dad prayed, but he'd never pray in his presence. It's a critical time that we have opportunity to pray together and study together and learn together. And the thing that keeps us from doing that is that there's so much in this life, it keeps us so busy. A couple of quick stories and then I'll be done. How many Jewish NFL football players are there? There are currently 7 guys playing in the NFL who are of the Jewish religion. In the whole history, that's a lot, really, because in the whole history of the NFL, there are only 37 guys that have played there. Now, that's not even one a year, if you look at how many years the NFL's been around. Why are there not many Jewish players in the NFL? Well, some people will say the Jewish people aren't particularly athletic. That's not the reason, I don't think. There would be people who were athletic in any group. How are you going to get to the NFL if Fridays and Saturdays are not available? If your family is saying, no, you can't play ball on Friday night, you can't play ball on Saturday, how are you going to have the skill to get to the NFL? The reality is, that's a sacrifice. That's a sacrifice that families and people have made. There are a lot of Jewish guys who play soccer. The schedule is a little bit different. There are things that are important in our lives. And a lot of times we say, well, you know, if you had a kid that was talented enough to play in the NFL, you'd want to kind of not follow that rule. But that's where the exceptions come in, and that's where we lose our attitude of being submissive. The only way that you reserve time for godly pursuits is to sacrifice. It's not going to just appear out of nowhere. It's going to happen because you plan for it to happen. I love to put jigsaw puzzles together. It's one of my favorite things to do. I don't like the real complex ones. I like the 300 pieces, the large pieces. You can put them together in an hour, hour and a half. And I have a lot of them. And I'd like to keep them all so that I could work them again. But my wife is not in favor of just stacking them head high in the hallway. So I have a space where I can keep 9 of them. And so when I get a new one, if it's a really good one, then I'd like to keep it. But the only way I can keep it is to give one of the others to Goodwill. And I could get a bigger shelf. I could get a bigger box. But it helps me to remember that I don't get to add things without taking something away. People say, well, do this. Okay, I will do that. But that's going to mean I have to give up something else. We have to make sacrifices for the things that we consider important. Our values are put into place. Our values are reflected every single day by the things we prioritize and the things that we choose to do. God didn't give the Jewish people a choice. He said, you're going to rest. In the new covenant with us, he didn't order us to do that. But the wisdom of resting is still there. And he even promises to us in Hebrews this blessed rest that's going to come to us. We have a place of Sabbath rest. And probably all of us come to places in our lives where we look forward to the moment and that really begins. This morning, if you're not sure that you're going to be a part of God's Sabbath rest, we would encourage you not to leave this building until you are secure with God. If there's something we could do to help you in that process, we'd be glad to. If you'd make that known while we sing this song together.